present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome to a new series of the News Quiz, this week from the Pleasance Theatre at the Edinburgh Fringe. We start with a cutting from the Careers Organisation Bulletin, read by Charlotte Green.
Wanted, man to work on nuclear fissionable isotope molecular reactive counters and three-phase cyclotronic uranium photosynthesizers. No experience necessary.
Thank you, the Reverend Keith W. Munday of Northamptonshire for sending us there. Well, now let's meet the teams. We'll welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Mark Steele. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran and Tony Hawkes. Before we start round one, here's a news item from the Bristol Evening Post, sent in by Mrs. Hazel Williams of Bristol.
Paul Wisdell, a spokesman for the Bristol Development Corporation, said the traffic jams had been unavoidable. He said it might look like chaos down there, but it's all the result of careful planning.
Francis, your question is first, and it's this. Who couldn't keep mum about keeping mum?
Without clues, as we're in Edinburgh.
John Redwood comes into this.
Oh, well, I think this could be about John Redwood.
Good heavens, that's a good guess.
I may be wrong. He's decided to pick on someone his own size. He's started attacking teenage girls, I think. Is that right? And he says that they ought to behave themselves, and if they don't, he's going to lock them up, put them in a home, blacking factory, that sort of thing, send their children up the chimneys. Is that right?
Well, not actually. I think it's
well, I think it is. He's launched his Conservative... All right, if you rather straight answer, he's launched a new think tank called Conservative 2000. It's a film, isn't it? A space odyssey, I think. and he has proposed single mothers, teenage single mothers, as he calls them, should finish their A-levels. Because, as we all know, there are an awful lot of A-levels about these days, and he doesn't see why they should miss out on these things. So he wants them to carry on, do their A-levels, and if necessary, so they can get their A-levels, give their children up for adoption, or give them to their grannies, or any passing person who wants a child, and get on and do their exams.
If I give you 2 points, will you shut up?
Can I have some more?
I think we're very hard on John Redwood.
A friend of yours, is he?
Well, 6 months ago, it's clear to me that Conservative Central Office went to John Redwood and said, John, we want a meaningless sacrifice at this time. We need someone to make John Major look good. And this man has sacrificed his subsequent career to doing just that. I think we've completely misinterpreted the Redwood factor. I think he's been put in as a sleeper to improve Major's chances, which he does every time he opens his mouth.
You may well be right. This is about the former Welsh Secretary, John Redwood, who issued his latest edict blaming the poor economic state of the country on young single mothers. He suggests that to save money, babies should be put up for adoption. He calls this his social agenda. You can only guess what his unsocial agenda is. Mr. Redwood accused young pregnant girls of jumping the housing queue, which, given their predicament, seems an unfortunate choice of phrase. A-levels or not. Mark, how nice to have you on the programme. Your question is this. What moving story has opponents up in arms?
Yes, this is the privatisation of various things to do with arms. The arms trade, I should imagine. That's probably it, isn't it?
It is.
And also, well, how far are they going to go with it? Because they're so obsessed with this privatisation now, and they're getting ever more down this road. And I suppose they'll just end up putting it out to tender and getting private security firms to do the whole army's job, and just the bouncers stood there instead of an army. And as the as the opposing army comes towards the border, they'll just go, oi, no coming in here without a tie. Right.
This is the controversial news that the Ministry of Defence is to contract out their arms movements to private transport firms. This follows a pilot scheme they've been running for some years with the Iraqis. I'm prepared to wait, I don't mind. Tony, whose taste for power attack left a bitter taste?
Right, well, I would think this would be Brian Gould, really. Basically, the Labour Party MPs who've realised there's about 18 months or so to go to a general election, and they've thought, bloody hell, if we're not very careful here, we're going to get elected. So, you know, they've realised that the Tories have stopped slagging their leader off, and they thought there's a bit of a void, bit of a gap here. We can step in cleverly and slag our leader. And Brian Gould kind of led from the front, from his power base in New Zealand, where he has his finger very much on the pulse of British politics. And he said that Blair was basically using the politics of FA Cup politics, he described it, you know, just playing to win.
Well, he didn't.
Yes, that is.
He didn't really say that, did he not?
The point is that it is alleged that he said that, but he denies it absolutely. He says the copy that appeared in the London Evening Standard was in fact a travesty of what
he said. Well, it was written by the son of the Home Secretary. It's a boy called Nick Howard, age 19.
And what he actually
wrote
said
it,
was...
Who's the son of Michael Howard. This is perfectly true. They'd asked Gould to write an article. Something came out of the fax machine about the Labour Party. They thought, oh, this is old Gould, bung it in. It appeared with his photo on the top of it, his name, saying, don't vote for the Labour Party. And, in fact, it was a piece that had been sent over by 19-year-old Nick Howard, son of the Home Secretary. And you'd think they might have guessed, because the first paragraph of this piece that appeared in the London Evening Standard said, I was 3 years old in 1979. Just a tiny clue that perhaps it wasn't Brian Gould writing this thing.
Well, he's always looked extremely youthful, hasn't he, Gould?
What terrifies me about Tony Blair is when you just compare him even to someone like Bill Clinton, because at least when Bill Clinton said, I smoked dope, but I didn't inhale, everyone went, nah, of course you did. But if Tony Blair had said that, everyone would have said, nah, you never smoked dope in your life, you liar.
And remember, you heard it here first. Alan, here's a piece of music for you.
All day I face the barren waste without the taste of water, cool water.
What's bugging us by not being on tap?
Not this year, it's the... most boring summer since records began. Nobody talks about anything except this weather. They said records began in 1649. It's the hottest, driest summer since 1649, and one wonders what they did in 1648 when it was hot. Did they say, bloody hot, isn't it? And they said, well, I'm not really too sure. I can't remember what it was. Does anybody know what it was like in 1647? Anyway, it's got terribly hot, and there isn't any water. It's why I'm carrying my own bottle of Perrier, which I have bathed in twice already. And when my bladder's finished with it after the programme, the geraniums are in for a treat. And we have to recycle everything. There was a thing about bugs. Is it about these huge wasps that are coming in because there's no water?
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, why animals would come in because there isn't any water, I don't know. But then they're not very bright, or they wouldn't be insects. They'd be leader of the Conservative Party or something. Because England is now very dry, all these animals think it's the Sahara, and they're coming here and stinging people.
And Scotland,
unlike the water
well.
Companies, are staying here and stinging people.
No, the great treat about it was the re-emergence of old Gummer. Did you see old John Selwyn Gummer? I'd forgotten he existed. I know, but he's suddenly popped up again. I've quite forgotten about him, and it turns out he's still a cabinet minister.
He isn't, come on.
He's still Secretary of State for the Environment. He has been since 1649, and he's still there. And he suddenly popped up after years of silence. I mean, the last time anyone heard of him was when he was force-feeding that daughter of his hamburger. Years ago. That was about 10 years ago now. And he suddenly popped up and said, you mustn't have baths. You've got to wash in your own saliva, I think. I think you spit on your hands and then rub them against your face.
That's full of old hamburger. It must be nasty in the Gummer household. You can't even hose the family now.
Well, there is a simple cure for the drought. All we need to do is everyone in the country needs to arrange a barbecue for tomorrow. And then it just will rain, won't it?
Winner, Tony.
Thank you.
Let me tell you, the scores at the end of round one are, as is traditional in the News Quiz, 4-4. We start round two with some fishing news from the Daily Mail.
Such is their dedication that there was hardly a squeak of protest when he decreed that until the competition is over, the coarse fishermen of England are banned from having sex. Anyone who breaches the rule is likely to be sent home with his tackle.
There had been a squeak of protest, presumably it would have been without his tackle. However, I'd like to say thank you to G.W. Alton from Twickenham for sending us that. Francis, how was Dennis a menace to Uncle Joe?
Dennis Healy, perhaps.
Absolutely so.
It was during the Cold War, which is now over, apparently, and Britain set up an anti-Soviet secret department of the Foreign Office to wage war on Stalin. And it was a sort of standoff between Dennis Healy's eyebrows and Stalin's moustache, I think, probably. Mutual assured destruction is the technical term for it. But it was a propaganda department of the Foreign Office involving Dennis Healy and all sorts of strange people. I think Dennis Thatcher, probably, I don't know. John Selwyn Gummer, for all I know. And they went around saying, oh, Soviet Union, bad place. But it was all very hush-hush. So it wasn't a very successful propaganda department because it was so secret that they didn't get any of their propaganda. It's only now emerged, all these years later.
And they're holding some of it back because it might embarrass people. However, it was the release of government documents revealing the Secret Intelligence Service recruited a celebrity team in their propaganda war against Stalin. The 1940s and 50s recruits included Dennis Healy, Bertrand Russell and the spy Guy Burgess. I'm sorry. Guy Burgess. No, I was right the first time. Mark, who has the mother of all problems with his daughters?
This is your man Saddam Hussein, whose daughters have one by one run off with, with their husbands to Jordan. Maybe there was a cheap offer going or something at Thompson's, and they've all gone off there, and Saddam's desperate to get them back, but they won't have it.
I think you've done the deal. We give them Gummer's daughter, and we get Saddam's daughter in exchange.
Something like that. This does refer to the Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein and his defective daughters. We're not actually sure what all the fuss is about. All right. We're not actually sure what all the fuss is about. Margaret Thatcher was leader for years, and her defective son never did her any harm. Saddam's problem is that his government comprises a bunch of ignorant friends and relatives whose sole aim in life is to enrich themselves. That Margaret Thatcher analogy gets better and better. Tony, will you have a listen to this? Well, that was from the Yeoman of the Guard, sort of gives you a hint to what the question might be, which is this. Who had a beef about their early release from the Tower?
Yes, well, I've put two and two together and come up with beef eaters here. It was a story this week about beef eaters. They're now incorporated into the Department of National Heritage, and they've got to retire at 60 instead of 65, and they're rather miffed about this because you can't become a beef eater when you're young. You've got to be quite old, obviously. You don't see any young beef eaters, do you? I suppose it depends what sort of parties you go to, really. But they're worried, these beef eaters, that this is the thin end of the wedge. And the thin end of the wedge. They're very worried. And they think that they're actually going to do away with them and get part-time beef eaters in. I mean, what is a part-time beef eater? That's a weak-willed vegetarian, isn't it?
Alan, your question again. Who raised the blood pressure with his stressful ideas?
I just need a clue here. Who is about stress? Oh, it's not him. Oh, yes, he's done an impression, ladies and gentlemen, of what I take to be the Duke of this fair city.
That's right.
Zorba the Scot.
That's right. Good.
Well, the Queen's Radiant Consort.
He's got a turn of phrase, isn't he?
Saw fit during the week to say that we didn't need counselling during World War II and what was all this rubbish. When things went a bit black for Adolf Hitler, he didn't send round for a counsellor, he shot himself like any decent animal. And that was what was wrong with Britain today, is that everybody ran sobbing to a counsellor instead of getting their fingers up and sticking it in their ears. This from a man who has managed, I think, single-handedly to reduce his children to psychic wrecks, and most of his in-laws. But apparently Prince Philip's cure is actually to bite on the bullet.
This was Prince Philip, who attacked stress counselling for servicemen as trendy and unnecessary. He came back from the war with a stiff upper lip, just got on with everyday problems like marrying the king's daughter. And the scores at the end of round two are still tied at 8-all. That's brilliant. Mark, here's a piece of music for you.
Stop eating that fudge, 'cause here comes the judge. Don't nobody fudge, 'cause here comes the judge. Judge Shorty is presiding today, and he don't take no stuff from nobody, no kind of way. Hey boy, take off that hat.
That was Here Comes the Judge by Shorty Long. The question is, who got a wigging from his pop?
Well, to be truthful, I can't remember the name, but it was the son of a judge who stole the wig, or borrowed the wig and the robes from his father, and used them for a video.
Rock concert?
A rock concert, was it, indeed, yeah, and stole them for those reasons. I wonder if all the other judges have said, well, I mean, if he will leave his wig and his robes out, then exposing them like that is asking for them to be stolen. I mean, it's only going to reason that a young man put temptation in his way, then it's only to be expected he's going to want to go the whole way and use them in a video and a rock concert.
His dad said that he likes this group slightly better than the previous ones his son had been in. Do you see that? It's called the Wayward Sons, I think, this rock group. And his father said that he'd never liked these rock groups his son was in, because he'd been to their concerts and they all dressed up in weird clothes and pranced around making an exhibition of themselves. And he couldn't understand a word they said. So I should have thought he felt rather at home.
Tony, what slim chance is all in the head?
It's a story about dieting, all being in the head. Yes. I think it's people at an Oxford hospital. They did some research on mice about dieting, which seems to me a bit of a mistake, really, because I've never seen an overweight mouse. They keep themselves nicely in trim, don't they, really? But a little bit of jogging when we're not looking. But they did the research on them, and they've discovered that in our brains there's this chemical called serotonin. And what this does, this regulates the appetite. So if you diet, the problem is you produce less serotonin, and then the next time you eat, you actually need to eat more to make up for this lack of serotonin. So if you diet, you actually then need to eat more, and then you get fat and you think, I better diet a bit more, and then you eat even more. And it's just this dreadful spiralling situation. So I can only infer from this that the only logical, realistic way to lose weight is to take your own life. Which, it's drastic. But anyone interested in buying copies of my book, Diet Without a T, copies are on sale afterwards. Yeah.
Well done. We'll earn points there. Alan, your question again. Whose winning, whining way has proved less than peachy?
This is two ghastly people. Who produce
back to John Gummer again.
Produce an English wine. Anyway, they've got a vineyard. Yep. These tiny, shriveled little grapes from which they produce a wine. And they wanted to produce a dessert wine.
Yes.
And every time they drank this stuff, their face turned into walnuts because of English wine, like alum. So they decided to put some peach juice into it, and it then became a dessert wine. Whereupon 30,000 people in Brussels and Stuttgart and all the other places came round and beat them to a jelly, as they should, and said, this is totally illegal wine. It is bloody peach juice. This is not wine at all. You cannot call this wine.
Do you know what they called it, by the way? It's a wonderful name.
Serotonin. I think it's wonderful, wonderful for a diet. You take a couple of gulps of that, and you'd rather be a mouse. What did they call it, Barry? I'm sure you know. Have you got it written down?
Yes.
You clever bugger, you prepared this. What is it? Do tell us. The world is waiting. We're hanging on your lips. Not a nice place to be in this weather.
It's called Old Luxter's Noble Bacchus.
Yes, you'd really want to walk into a pub and order that.
This concerns the Chiltern Valley Winery that was fined £6,000 for putting artificial peach flavour into its English dessert wine. The 1992 vintage, Old Luxter's Noble Bacchus, sells for £10 per half bottle and is described as having a fine nose, full bouquet, and an aftertaste hinting of the impudent redolence of flavour enhancer E436. Scores have changed miraculously because Francis and Mark have 11, but Alan and Tony now have 12. your terms of music, Francis. Will you have a listen to this?
She was afraid to come out in the open, and so a blanket around her she wore. She was afraid to come out in the open, and so she sat bundled up on the shore.
2, 3, 4, tell the people what she wore.
It was an itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow polka dot bikini that she wore for the first time today.
And your question is, where will a spare tire get you driven off the beach?
I'd say Italy.
Yes. And moving on.
Moving on. Do you want any more? It's the mayor of somewhere or other who has suggested, or rather more than suggested, he's more or less passed a regulation, I think, saying that tourists, particularly English tourists for some reason, should only be allowed to wear revealing bathing costumes on the beach if they've got the body to support it, or rather the lack of body to support it. And so if you're slender, you can wear them, but if not, you should cover up. I think he heard that Fergie and Andy were on their way. That's about the size of it.
It is indeed the size of it.
You would think of all the problems they've got in Italy. What are the Italian authorities? They must have sat there thinking, well, we could try and deal with the rise of fascism. Nah. Mafia. Nah. What's that? Overweight women in bikinis. We'll clamp down on them.
That's right. It's all about the mayor of the Italian resort of Diano Marina, who has banned fat, ugly women from appearing in public places in bikinis. Trim waists, bust size, and firmness of buttocks will be checked by a newly recruited team of wardens. It's only 2,000 lira a day, but some of the wardens are prepared to pay more. Mark, your question again. Who might be kicking themselves for using their heads?
That will be the reference to the survey that's come out by an American that has said that they've done a survey on soccer players and that footballers who head the ball seem to do less well in IQ tests than those who kick the ball, apparently.
They get brain damaged. That's why every time they head it, they lose another few brain cells. And if they keep heading, they just end up unable to think straight, talking nonsense. Jimmy Hill springs to mind. And
he's been heading the cameras in the studio.
But does and it... so they shouldn't take headers, they should take backhanders instead, is that right?
Yes. Do you suppose more than or fewer than 1 in 7 footballers try on their wife's underwear? I was rather hoping... They all saw that survey during the week by the Courtauld Institute that says every 1 in every 7 men has at some time in his life tried on his wife's underwear. I was walking down Princes Street this afternoon, counting people, looking for panty lines. Every 8th man. But I suppose it would account... I suppose footballers would be exactly the same.
Well, it would depend how many balls they'd headed during the week.
I sort of thought it's a bit constricting wearing your wife's underwear.
Well, I wouldn't know, Ellen.
Cuts down the sprinting.
This is the theory that hitting a football too often can seriously affect your intelligence. Some teams have been so badly affected, they now put their players in shirts numbered to match their IQs, which means that Wimbledon can only play in a five-a-side league. Paul Gascoigne denied that excessive heading has had any effect on his mental powers, otherwise Glasgow Rangers wouldn't have signed him. But just to be on the safe side, he decided he'd better ask the team priest to light a candle and say a few Hail Marys for him. Tony, your question now. Where will there be a welcome in the modem, isn't it?
It's a computer question, isn't it?
It's the cybernet corpses.
You can help each other.
Oh, can we? Well, when Tony dies, I don't have to bury him. I can put him onto the internet and he will circle forever.
That's right.
You'll come past like Alice Comet every 120 years. I will light a brief candle and you'll be gone again like that. But I can call you up. After you're dead, I shall be able to call you up.
Where's the advantage in this for me?
You will be permanently remembered.
Right.
As a digit.
On the internet. Is there...
On the internet.
You could be booted up from time to time.
Yes.
Right.
When you think that this is not the answer at all, it's quite interesting. Really.
Is it a question about...
It's a question about Wales.
Accents. Welsh, yeah. I think there's a woman, a university professor, who... I've got it, who's... thanks for the help there, Alan. She's programming a computer to speak Welsh.
That's right.
I think what it is for banks who actually want... get them to talk in regional accents, which means that you can phone up a bank in the northeast and the computer will answer the phone and go, hey, oh, it's a personal loan you want. You've come to the right place here. So that sort of stuff. But to do this, they're also teaching one to speak Welsh extraordinarily as well. I don't know how you can get a computer to get the sound. But it's obviously a clever computer.
This can't work, this scheme, because I don't think I'm not even sure there is a Welsh language. I think they just make it up as they go along to annoy the English. I think they're stood there in a bar in Anglesey going, oh, the daffodils then, all right, there was a couple of English coming in now.
This is scientist Bryony Williams, who has taught a computer to speak Welsh. Dr. Williams of the University of Edinburgh has got it to master the most commonly used Welsh phrases, such as Yaki Da, never mind Neil, and... and you're a fine-looking sheep.
He wouldn't do this in Cardiff.
Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought on. Francis, have you brought a cutting for it?
Yes. It's from the Churchdown Parish magazine.
Yes.
Would the congregation please note that the bowl at the back of the church labelled for the sick is for... is for monetary donations only.
Mark, I think you're getting the drift of the programme now. Have you got a cutting for
it? This just struck me in the Croydon Guardian, this thing that sort of comes through me door each week, and I never normally read it, but it's got one of those little questionnaires that the sort of national newspapers have for famous people, sort of asking people what their favourite colour is and all that sort of thing. And it's got here, introducing a woman who is a project coordinator for conservationists. And it just struck me as the most peculiar answer, because one of the questions is, who is your greatest hero of all time? And she says, greatest hero of all time is a man called Professor C.O. Tan, because he was a Russian who for 30 years studied cowslips. Of all time. You could have anyone.
Tony.
I've got something here from The Guardian. And it says, a sign seen this week in a police canteen in Christchurch, New Zealand, reads, will the person who took a slice of cake from the commissioner's office return it immediately? It is needed as evidence in a poisoning case.
Alan.
Well, I have a topical from the Brighton Evening Argus, Barry. Mm-hmm. There's the current hot spell, coupled with a sharp rise in the numbers of English sun lovers preferring a domestic holiday to the expense of a foreign one, has renewed pressure on Brighton Borough Council to increase the extent of its nude bathing beach. Mr. John Driscoll, spokesman for the pressure group opposing the proposition, said, up until recently, we'd been confident of preventing the extension, but now things are looking a little shaky.
Anyway, thank you all. Let's look at the final scores now. They're quite interesting. Francis and Mark's got a very good 15, but Alan and Tony just pipped on the post. They got 16. This week's winners. Well done. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Daily Mail, sent in by Rebecca Paver of Guildford.
A wife advertised for a potent partner after becoming bored with her sex life and made a hotel date with the first man who replied. But when Carla Franchetti, 37, arrived, the naked man sitting on the bed with a bottle of champagne was her 41-year-old husband, Francesco. They are now getting divorced.
And with that, goodbye.